Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 11, titled Morningstar. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I mostly like this episode. There's a couple things. I this medieval kind of like going out from the walls to meet those zombies with human walls is a little janky, but it's also time-worn and tested and tropey. I mean, we've seen it for in better productions, we've seen it in worse productions. It does add a little bit of kind of excitement to the offering, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, yeah, I liked it. I liked the conversations on the eve of battle. I like people reconciling. I like people being honest with each other. I like the fact that the Whispers continue to surprise with tactics. You know, you don't think of them being capable of whipping up some pseudo napalm from Pine Tar.
Is that a thing? Did you do any research on that? Is that how that works? Is Pine Tar ultra flammable like gasoline?
Oh, it's certainly like, yeah, you get a resinous pine tree and they burn really well. But like, can you harvest it in this kind of quantities and this with this kind of animal? I honestly don't know. But I imagine most of that stuff is flammable, and I'm gonna roll with it, sure.
What are they making their slingshots out of?
That's a good question, because I've had this is literally just a water balloon slingshot. Uh-huh. Like, they're a hell of a lot of fun. They're a hell of a lot of fun. You can find them on the shelf. I wouldn't imagine it's too hard to make out of like surgical tubing and stuff, and that shit would be pretty abundant, right? You can find rubber or like old bicycle inner tubes. You braid a couple of those together. Like, it doesn't stretch my imagination.
The fat of the land. Right. Bicycle inner tubes and surgical tubing. You know, the things that the Whisperers thrive on.
I just feel like that, like, 10 years after a global apocalypse, I'm still not calling bullshit on finding rubber and stretchy things. Elastic underwear bands. Like, it's you're just going to get tons of that stuff.
That's what happened. But for the Morningstar is them ripping all of the elastic out of their underwear. It's the underwear is useless anyway. It's tattered from the waistband down anyway.
You go shambling through the horde, you have someone grab a zombie, you give him a snuggie, and then you slice off about 18 inches of waistband, you move on to the next one
before harvest, the zombies all... as it's known.
Yeah, yeah, the nylon the nylon harvesting. You get your pine tar from the tree, you get your nylon from the zombies wearing Hanes.
Abundant amount. Yeah, I didn't even think about all the underwear out there. Never 10, mind, 000. I retract my question.
10,000 waistbands on underwear, to say nothing of the bras. The bra, right. I have a good authority. They have nylon and latex and shit on them.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, like, probably a lot of people died wearing sweatpants. You got the ankle cuffs there.
Yeah,
a lot of elastic.
A lot more elastic out there roaming the lands in the zombie apocalypse than you'd think.
It's true.
Than you'd think of your first dismissive thought. What'd you think of the episode?
I thought it was decent. I think it has committed a pretty egregious sin, though, and maybe I just didn't read this right. Why is Alexandria not informed about a monumental horde coming to destroy Hilltop?
I think it's because they took out the relays.
You mean the ones that Eugene is using to flirt?
That's a really good question. Why Eugene's high gain antenna can't just communicate with Alexandria? Maybe they don't have a corresponding ham tower and they just have short range stuff. But
and Rosita talks to Gabriel this episode after they find out about the horde. So like, and Eugene says, "Oh, did you tell him?" She's like, "Hell no! What? What do you mean, hell no? Hell yes! You need to tell those people." I don't know. It was shocking to me when no one was telling Alexandria about this.
Yeah, that's the thing, I guess, and maybe I blacked out because almost everything in Rosita for the last few episodes has been terrible. Like, again, like, I don't know what the fuck they're doing with her character.
Yeah, I'd watch that like, scene twice.
I thought that, like, yeah, that they had taken out the relays, and for some reason the big ham won't talk to the small shortwave radios that they got that they're using for hand-to-hand. You're right, that's not great. That and the Rosita stuff was the thing that really... kind of stuck in my craw, like a hastily assembled mace out of bicycle gears wielded by the professor, sticks in a zombie skull.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of stuck there. Couldn't get it dislodged quite, no matter how much I cleared my throat.
All right. Yes, that's what I thought. It was decent. I enjoyed some of the fighting scenes, even. Like, they weren't the most spectacularly staged things, but I enjoyed seeing, you know, the layers of defense and the tactics that they were employing. So
it does seem some of our speculation last week about how this the season's going to proceed, where it's going to be essentially a leapfrogging kind of blitzkrieg of all of the settlements, is correct. That, you know, she's going to assemble all of her horde and she's going to smash Hilltop, and then she's going to smash Oceanside, and then Alexandria as the main meal. And I don't know, because I was like, maybe they can beat him off for one assault. But like, Hilltop seems like it's in flames, man.
Yeah.
I don't know what their plan was to deal with their wooden walls being set afire. But I hope they have a good one, because, man, we haven't even seen the catapults come out. Also, as soon as I heard the blacksmith say catapults, I'm like, Jesus Christ, these people. You had trebuchets right there, man. What, you found a shitty Lego catapult and decided to copy that instead of the obviously superior siege weapons? I don't understand. Hilltop is forfeit.
Yeah. I feel like I was totally wrong about how the rest of the season was going to go, because when I was speculating about it, I'm like, man, the next logical step here is for Alpha to just attack with the Horde. But we've got six episodes left. There's no way that happens this soon. And when I was talking about, who are all the other people that are out there, like Michonne's out there on the island, they could spend an episode with her. That feels like old Walking Dead. And shame on me for thinking that new Walking Dead is anything like old Walking Dead, because old Walking Dead would have taken a 4-episode governor arc right now and said, we need to go back to the beginning, right? Explain how we got here.
Yeah. Yeah. Or follow Michonne as she negotiates with the naval base people and tries to secure her, blah, blah, you know.
And then several scenes with Luke flirting with his Oceanside, whatever. Let's do all that right now before we get to the main event. No, this is New Walking Dead, and New Walking Dead just gets right the fuck to it. So
right to the point. Which I like.
I'm happy.
I think that's pretty good. And I also think that you got three settlements to smash. You got 6 episodes left, right? 7 episodes. You can make a meal out of every single settlement. Leave 2 episodes for Alexandria and still have an episode or 2 left over to explore Michonne getting her secret weapon, which obviously is going to be needed to turn the tide, and explore some of those other kind of side plots we talked about.
I think there's only 16 episodes in this season.
And we're on episode 11, right?
Yeah. So we got 5 more after this.
Oh, right. For some reason, I was thinking 18. You're right. Yeah. We got 5. So, yeah.
But we still have plenty of time. Yeah.
Still, one for each episode, one for each settlement being attacked and besieged, and a couple of bonus episodes to deal with the fallout and the side plot. So I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it's enjoyable so far. All right, maybe we should get into the recap.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which, given last weekend, seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
We start off with Beta overseeing the sap harvest, I guess. Or maybe they're going to be making some serious maple syrup. I don't know. Don't look like maple syrup.
So said Whisper's Canadian confirmed. They're just in the middle of a pitched battle. They gotta make sure their strategic syrup reserves are filled.
So he's overseeing that while Alpha and Negan are voluntarily exchanging blows with the Switch. And then they all march with the dead while chanting their cult slogans.
We are the end of the world. Yeah, it's pretty creepy. I do wonder, like, if the zombies, like, how many people have died because they got a little too enthusiastic about the chanting, and the zombies, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, we are, guys, aren't we? Huh? We're the end of the world. We really are.
Yeah. I can't hear you, Frank. Oh, God, that's not Frank. I imagine it goes a little something like that. What's your read on Negan?
Okay, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is great. They're playing this really sly if they're trying to say that he's still, like, I don't know, as much on the side of Alexandria as he's ever been. Right. Because I am genuinely up in the air on that. I don't know at this point. I thought last episode, that he was still on Team Alexandria, essentially, and he was trying to get in good with Alpha to fuck with her. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. The one thing I thought for sure is that he would try to protect the kids, you know, because he's have a soft spot for children. I do think he sees them as innocent. Judith, the, you know, scion of Rick, and RJ, people like that. And it just doesn't. And I was looking for, like, well, maybe him trying to get them to surrender, like, is a way to let them fight another day. But, like, what surrender to this? It's not like that, man. You are kind of entering a death cult. This isn't like going into a prison camp and you might be liberated from later. There's no, that's not going to happen. So, and he's got, like, he is inside her inner circle. He could just, like, chop her in half anytime he wants to, break her neck, whatever. And he's not taking that opportunity. So I mean, are they kind of like having him doing a little bit of morgalizing, flipping into just an opportunist? Like, he's going to be with the Whispers until it looks like the Whispers are going to lose and he's going to defect. And if that's the case, like, I don't think it's going to work, because it seems like the Alexandrians at least are, wise to his ways enough to see his fingerprints in the, you know, roadblocks and the people strung up as like that's some classic Negan, they're telling us, you know, this harkens back to the first time we met Negan, right? You know, them, the Alexandrians riding forth confident and seeing all their ways blocked with flaming logs. And I don't know what his plan is. I do not know.
I would say he's going all in on the Whispers if the Whispers weren't so insane. I don't think Negan is that insane. I think Negan can be an asshole. I think Negan is a lot of things, but insane to the point of joining up with a death cult that wears the skins of the dead and walks among them. I don't see it. Yeah. So I'm still on, like, Negan is probably not true blue for Alpha here, but they're doing a really good job of confusing the issue, which I like.
Yeah. And also, like, not being able to see the way back. Like, it's fine to not understand, like, Negan's plan, but to not understand, like, okay, what is his, you know, what's his after plan? It doesn't seem like it was a suicide attack, because if it was, he would have done it by now.
Yeah.
Maybe he's going to sabotage. There's going to be some crucial sabotage. I don't know. But I thought he made a genuine conversion to the Rick side of the Force, you know? So we'll see.
Yeah. Are they okay? Talking about these cult slogans that they're whispering, are they able to teach walkers how to speak, or are there just a lot more whispers than I think?
I think they're hinting that there's a lot more whispers than we think, like maybe hundreds. Because there's no, like, if they teach zombies how to do more than just death rattle, I don't know, man. That's going to,
well, there's precedent for it.
A little too far in a Z Nation, is there?
Oh yeah, I mean Romero did it.
I thought you were talking about back in the Governor Poindexter days, if they had taught like some kind of singing zombie chorus, but I don't think so. No,
right? They were caroling.
Yeah, you had Bubs, wasn't that the zombie they taught to shoot a gun and like recognize basic commands? And
yeah, so they can be taught potentially. I don't know if that applies to these types of zombies. Maybe not. We've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, I saw the other documentary where the zombies were smart enough to order up more paramedics for more brains.
Uh-huh.
You know, so like it's not without precedent. You're right. In the canon.
So Eugene continues his conversation with the radio lady, whose name is Stephanie. Is that right?
Stephanie, the ham girl. Yep.
Okay. He seems very comfortable with her. She saw the same satellite fall, turns out, which means that they're close to each other. Eugene tells her they're in Virginia and offers to meet in public. You know, nothing creepy, nothing creepy. She agrees, but tells him not to mention it to his people. She'll take it to hers and see what they say. This has bad, bad, like, shame date stuff written all over. Like, I don't want people to know I'm talking to you. Like, I don't want people to know we're fucking. But yeah, meet me here. Don't tell anybody you're coming. You know, don't mention it to anybody because I don't want anybody to find out. But we'll totally bang when we get there. I don't know.
Yeah. And then Eugene's got like the self-esteem where he'll just walk into any kind of precondition and he'll. Yeah. Like he's going to say where he's at first. There is some interesting like actual information. We know we speculated this, too. Like, you know, if you're in visual line of sight of the satellite, that implies you're a couple hundred miles away from, you know, where it landed because of the way the Earth is shaped, et cetera. So they made that same kind of conclusion that they're, you know, this isn't like a Los Angeles, D.C. type of romance. They realize that they're within a few hundred miles. And by the end of the episode, we'll get a much bigger fix. Just generally speaking, if you had to put money on it, do you think this is going to a good place or a bad place?
Man, how could it go to a bad place?
Yeah, what's the upside on an elaborate ruse to lure a lonely man into the middle of nowhere in West Virginia?
And I'm thinking like in terms of the meta, the show, right? Like,
and shove him in a boxcar labeled B.
He's definitely a B.
Yeah, I don't know what A and B means, but if whatever it is, he's definitely a B. Yeah.
I just don't know. Like, okay. Let's say they deal with the Whisperer threat this season, done, over. Is this the setup for season 11? What does Maggie coming back have to do with any of that? Like, what is the...
Yeah, it looks like the Whispers are going to be put to bed this season, which means what is even season 11? Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like introducing yet another villain to that final season makes a ton of sense, but also I don't know what they do if they don't.
It might not be a non-conventional villain. Like, it's just two different people that are trying to reboot civilization, Georgie and, you know, the trash people, and they got their good and bad points, and they're like, you know, trying to move into Alexandria's and the community's turf, and like, you know, like this is a conquering empire. Do you join it? Do you resist? Do you maintain your freedom? I think that stuff is inherently interesting, but I also like that, like, it's just real political kind of rebellion, colonial kind of thing. Like, I think that would be really cool. Taming the West. There's tons of, like, you know, analogies you can a draw here. I think that'd be really interesting, but I don't know if it's Walking Dead enough. Like, essentially, hey, Alpha rounded up all the shambling dead in a 500-mile radius, and so when we just dealt with that, so now it's just nothing but us to hate each other, you know, and squabble. That's a cool plot, but I don't know if you can do a whole season on it for The Walking Dead.
Is it possible that this show would just take us back to square one, like destroy Alexandria, destroy Hilltop, leave us with a handful of survivors who are now back on the run at the end of this season or this show?
That would be the most Walking Dead thing in the world to do. And we've talked about this many times. Most shows find a way to subvert their, you know, at least subvert, even if it's a dour, depressing show. Like, you know, Game of Thrones is that way. We always talk about, like, you know, what's Martin playing at? What's he getting at? You know, because if Game of Thrones continues as it is to the end, then like all your favorite people die. Evil absolutely wins and everything just gets worse. And that's been kind of the Walking Dead's theme for the majority of its history. So like, unless they subvert that, and like my preference would be to end this on just a modicum of hope, you know, that you've got the future there. And there's people too damaged to take to enjoy those fruits of that labor, like maybe Carol, for example, and Daryl. But like, that's what I'm hoping for. But yeah, it's entirely within the show's DNA just to like collapse us back to another group of six people wandering with a few children trying to find safety again.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm genuinely curious where they're going to take this thing.
And if you're looking for that, there's a little bit of railroad tracks laid to that with the blacksmith conversation where he's like, son, how many times have you been out ranging? 100, 200 times? Have you ever seen a place like Hilltop or Alexandria? Like, nope. So like, this is it. This is the last best hope for civilization in a several hundred mile radius, perhaps.
Yeah. Speaking of the blacksmiths, they spot Gamma coming into Hilltop and get curious. So they ask Aaron about her and he explains the situation. Earl, who I guess is the blacksmith, I finally learned his name, doesn't want to let her see her nephew, and Boston Rob tells him, I'll handle it.
And here's this is a great personal drama where I understand completely everyone on both sides of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, if I was Earl, fuck Mary and the Whispers wanting to get like a glimmer of that, you know, of the child. Like, that's not, we're not doing this. Like, if Boston Rob will go on to say, we're not doing this for her or for the Whispers or for the mom or we're doing this for the child and for us, our future. That's very understandable. And, you know, it's not very friendly and welcoming to the Whispers, but Jesus Christ, these people are human and they're going to have a human reaction to this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I get where he's coming from. Yeah, it's handled pretty well. And Earl is becoming a character now, not just the dude who looks at things and recreates them.
Right.
So then Ezekiel has heard about Carol's cave incident and finds her at Daryl's secret hideout, and he asks her to come back, but she doesn't really respond.
Yeah, I don't know. He's laying the connection there. Just going out there, and like, this is a theme of the episode that like, in this zombie apocalypse, no one knows how to kind of commiserate with people anymore. So it seems like instead, when someone's going wrong, people pull away in both directions and just a little bit of human contact. Ezekiel swallowing his pride and his worry and going over and checking up on his ex-wife is enough to make that human connection and start to bring someone back. I like that part of it too.
I think Lydia said something similar to Carol later on in this episode.
Yep.
Which hopefully that's going to start to bring her back from the brink, because man, she's far gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll see. So Kelly wants to go back out for Connie. Yumiko is not sure she's still alive, but she's going out with them anyway. And Daryl and Lydia return, warning them that, hey, we can't go out there because Alpha's on the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's natural for Miko to want to know what Magna was saying at the end. It felt a little too writerly. Like, Magna did have a big confessional to Kelly about why she wants to get back and why and like Yumiko almost supernaturally is aware of there's some things unsaid and stuff, or yeah. maybe it's just her feeling guilty about the way things too, but it felt a little too kind of, I don't know, all this like bickering amongst a group felt a little bit perfunctory until the whole town got involved, and then it made a little bit more sense. But yeah,
for sure. So then Rosita wanders into the radio room and pisses Eugene off by attempting to speak to Blue Weevil, his new girlfriend from another school. He shouts her out of the room and then tries to apologize to his radio friend.
Yeah, you know, Rosita, I'm not entirely sure what CB radio refers to, but I guarantee it's not cock block. Come on. Come on. This man's trying to get something together, trying to make a long distance love connection. And you get your first time you hear him talking to a woman, you got to get up there and mix it up.
Damn.
But it makes sense, right? Like, you know, Eugene's kind of a fool to leave this thing unsecured because, of course, like anyone walking by hears a strange voice talking on the radio, it's going to be like an alien made a contact.
Yeah, he's treating this like it's his own private clubhouse when in fact this is just like a part of the town's infrastructure, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's not the first person to take perhaps untoward ownership of a civic project, but it does seem like that's what's happening. Yeah, this is his radio now.
Yeah. Then Negan suggests to Alpha that she force Alexandria to join them rather than killing them all, and she just says, go on, I'm listening.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she's not hanging up. None of this stuff actually seems like it makes a difference in how things are going to go. So,
yeah,
we
kind of knew there had to be a turning point, right? Where Alpha would stop listening to these brilliant ideas that Negan has and start doing her own Alpha thing. Because otherwise, she wouldn't feel Alpha enough.
Like Negan, nothing good has happened to Negan other than he got sex.
And that is very arguable.
Yeah, you're really messing with the definition. You're really straining the pizza analogy, let's say, if you're going to say that it's still pretty good. And it's not about Samantha Morton. It's honestly a lot about the zombie mask.
It's a lot about the dead skin and grime. Yeah.
And the lack of cleanliness and wiping and all those things that are going into the package. But it's not like Negan's had some success with machinations and now she's starting to wise up. It's almost feeling like Negan's been used from the beginning, which is not an unsatisfying arc for him, to be honest.
It makes sense. He's pulling Alpha seems smarter than to just fall for whatever he's selling.
Right. He's pulling some big Machiavellian thing and completely underestimating, you know, the brain dead cultists and all that stuff. And he's going to end up getting shanghaied by him. I don't know. That's not a bad arc for Negan.
Yeah.
It's just not super satisfying to watch. It just fizzle, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I don't think he's fought his last battle there. Anyway, the town listens to Lydia explain why they can't stay in Alexandria in this big sort of town meeting. Sorry, in Hilltop. Not Alexandria. Earl wants to fight, but Aaron wants to leave because of the kids. Daryl says, we're leaving for Oceanside. Everybody packs up the kids and they head out, but they find the road blocked by a felled tree and their zombified friends. And Daryl, for some reason, thinks Negan had something to do with this. I don't know. I guess it's the callback.
Yeah,
yeah, but like, is he assuming that no one else would think to block a road?
I think this is a theme where like there's been many assumptions made by the communities about what the Whisperers are doing, and we found out how many of them were unfounded or manufactured.
Yeah,
this I think is just another one of those that happens to be right. That it's not entirely I think the one thing that maybe was persuasive is I don't think if this was an Alpha idea entirely, they would have left the radio lookout strung up, because in their standpoint, those are guardians. You know, we need we can make use of them. Like, that's not saying that you can violate your religious codes in times of war or whatnot. But like, I feel like that's what they're saying. But also, this whole season's been about them making wild guesses, and it's very fog of war, and you know, and here's there's you know, a surmise that they're making and it happens to be right.
They've got an enemy that they don't really understand very well. So
seriously, and it's vice versa. Like their enemy does not understand them and what makes them tick. Because like I think that the other theme that they're setting up here is people that are fighting for a positive reason. They're fighting for something are inherently more powerful than people who are fighting against something, you know, because it's something you got versus something you're afraid that the other person has. And like one is just a stronger, you know, and I thought the council scene where everyone's going back and forth, the, you know, Earl, the blacksmith seems to be the, you know, hawkish party and Aaron is kind of the dove. And, you know, also think of the children and the leaders kind of like, yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if it's just 35 adults here, but there's, you know, and we can make our valiant stand. But like, what are we protecting? We're actually protecting Hilltop, or are we protecting the people that make up Hilltop? Because, yeah, maybe we'll have to look for. But you're talking to people that walked from fucking Georgia to get to where they're at now. Like, whoopty shit. Like, yeah, take the kids and let's go. I like that. It's so much more satisfying to see this than just them make up stupid shit. Morgan just decided he can't kill anyone's got to use a stick now. So that's right. Going to be the sticking point of the episode. Fuck that. This stuff is good. Yeah, I like it. I thought it was real sweet. The way Daryl deals with Judith, you know, I thought it was real cute how that you see RJ wearing Daryl's wings. Like that's like you can kind of like that's how they got to talk him into going onto the wagon. That all comes back around later. You know, Zeke kind of still trying to put connections out. King Ezekiel. I shouldn't be that familiar with the king. you know, putting out more feelers to Carol, keeping that lifeline alive. I thought that was good.
And then the kid transport returns to town where Daryl explains what they found on the road. Everyone freaks the fuck out, realizing that they're on their own. And they begin organizing for a fight. And Carol sort of looking on from the sidelines, I think just knowing that she caused all this.
Yeah, like this is what she wanted. Yeah. But now it's here and she's faced with all these people that's going to hurt. Yeah, no, I thought it's great. This is one of the core problems I think you had in the episode, the fact that like maybe Alexandria and Oceanside can't get there in time,
right?
But like they should definitely be warned,
yes,
that the Horde is coming, because like maybe their roads aren't blocked yet, and maybe they want to get their kids and infirm out of the cold rolled walls. I don't know.
Or maybe the Horde is headed their way. Like, how many does she have? They don't know. She could send the entire Horde to all three locations at the same time.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And it felt like, I don't know, it felt like there was an opportunity there for people to say, we've tried to contact, but they're not responding. And does that mean they've been attacked first? We don't know. All we have to do is decide what we're going to do. You know, there's essentially, doesn't matter, help's not coming. We have to focus on that now. I'm not sure why they went with this, because if you're right, and Rosita actually says that she talked to Gabriel, but didn't tell it like just an hour before the conversation and chose not to tell him about the Horde. That seems insane.
Yeah, no, it is truly insane. Especially when you consider, I think Hilltop still like the biggest food producer in the communities.
The last time people talked about it, that was, you know, that's why Maggie had so much sway.
Yeah.
And like the negotiations between because they were the net producer of almost everything. You know, they had the blacksmith, right. So they like the other, they're dependent on, you know,
they
machinery and all that kind of stuff.
At one point,
they had a monopoly on a doctor's. I guess they still have a doctor. We had multiple pieces of feedback. People wrote in and said that there is a medic at Hilltop that's been named but not seen yet. So there's and they've got the food production, because we've seen their extensive fields and operations, where it always feels like Alexander's got like victory gardens and hydroponics growing up, but like Hilltop's got crops. Hilltop's got like fields they're plowing and working. So yeah, they're the powerhouse. They're like the breadbasket and the fucking ammo factory.
Yeah, which is crazy considering the difference in like how much space they have. I always feel like Alexandria is 10 times bigger than Hilltop, and yet somehow they haven't got their shit together.
It's so weird, because like I guess it's like if if Alexander's in the middle of a suburb, there's still, you feel like that, like, okay, you take that soccer field, plow it up there. Bam. Mm-hmm. There's a couple acres of, you know, burn down a few houses and there's a couple more acres. Like where, yeah. What keeps them from not having a more extensive farming operation? You don't have to wall it all up. That's in the hilltop. Doesn't, you right. know?
Yeah. Just clear out some trees.
The whole medieval idea is like, you know, like the castle is just where you go in times of danger. The, you know, the crops and lands are outside those walls. So that it doesn't make much sense to me either.
But, you know, she probably should have told the the Alexandrians that the breadbasket's about to be taken out.
Yeah. The president of Alexandria should be informed of by the first lady, I guess. The chief councilman should be informed for sure.
Probably.
But there's also other things, because like I thought they were suggesting there was a radio breakdown, because Judith tries to get, I think you're supposed to understand that Judith tries to get in touch with Michonne and she doesn't come back. Now, Michonne is in Oceanside, which I think is further. Yeah, you know, obviously it's on the coast. So,
well, Michonne, Michonne's headed toward the naval base last we saw her.
Right. So she's maybe even further out of range.
Yeah, she's probably incommunicado. Yeah, we'll get to the scene where Rosita says she talked to Gabriel, but that's coming up still. So we get Carol catching Ezekiel digging through his secret stash of armor, and she finds out that he's dying, and so they decide to get it on.
Oh, yeah. This doesn't entirely make sense, but like something about Zeke reaching out, you know, the mortality, like there's kind of like, fuck it. And especially with Zeke, I don't know if he's a stage 3 clinger. Well, he's a stage 4 thyroid cancer patient. So I don't know what all is going into the equation of let's fuck. But the numbers are in King Ezekiel's favor right now.
They need to send Ezekiel in to open those fiery gates at the end of this episode, because, you know, he's forfeit anyway. He could just run in, set himself on fire, open those gates, and everybody else can run through.
Yeah, just that's all he's got to do. Just do it.
Yeah, come on, Zeke. Uh-huh. Get in there.
Uh-huh. You'll be warm and toasty for the rest of your life. It's a done deal.
Then Gamma sees Adam and wants to say hi, but Boston Rob stops her. I genuinely can't remember Boston Rob's real name. So I'm just calling
him. I don't. It's Boston Rob. It's a perfectly fine name for him. He's not making it out of this season. Come on.
Okay.
No, I like this. Like, you know, we'll usually like Aaron, and he's like got the correct view on things. I'm not sure Aaron's right. I think Aaron wants to be right, because it's a tactical advantage to, you know, have this new ally of the Whispers if you can turn her and turn others. But on the other hand, people, like you can't expect people to go along with this fucking psyop that you're doing.
Yeah. No, I get all the sides here. They're all making good points. It's just a shame it's all happening during this moment when there are other things to be doing.
Yeah.
So after banging, Ezekiel and Carol talk about all the pieces of themselves they've lost along the way. Some good conversations here. I like it. Talking about,
I like, you know, how like Carol put it on this man. This man. Yeah.
He's
this
out.
Man is spent. He's wiped out. He needs a sandwich and a nap. He's going to be useless in this battle.
Get this man a Gatorade.
Get Mick in there. It's gotta take out your legs, Zeke. I need it. You fucked with the. Yeah, it's like it's classic.
Yeah.
He's not going to have. He's giving his chi away. I don't know. I like the scene a lot. Him starting off with the accusation that you lost your sense of humor, mm-hmm. and that she comes like with a nice demonstration that that's not true at the end, where she says, "Wait, we're gonna die tonight." I thought that was a good. There, I've always thought they had good chemistry and they were cute together. Some of my favorite scenes last year, when, you know, they're trying to prep to make the festival special for each other or special for the community, and mm-hmm. deciding what crazy risk to take for what light bulb projectors and whatnot. And it's nice if this is going to be some of the last moments together. It's nice that they're like this.
So then Rosita encourages Eugene not to give up on his radio crush because she really likes him, and she proves that the feeling is mutual by offering to kiss him, which he's not able to do. I had to watch this scene twice to get what the fuck was happening.
Dude.
So it's my understanding that the offer to kiss her is her knowing that he can't do it because he likes this girl so much, who he's never met, that he somehow thinks they're dating and they're going steady, and it would be cheating on her to kiss Rosita. Am I reading that right?
That's exactly what's happening here.
God, it took
However,
me, there are so many leaps of logic and weird shit in this scene.
Yeah, it's this is Mean Girls logic. This feels like it could get like this could be like if any time the setting could also be like as soon as Eugene goes in for the kiss, 17 kids jump out of trees and start laughing at him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, give him pink bellies and purple nurples. Like, it feels like the setup of something you'd pull on. And everything.
If you could replace about any character in the scene with Rachel McAdams, you know you're in a teen comedy, right?
Yes. Stop making whatever you're trying to make happen here. The Walking Dead. This fed shit needs to go. I don't understand. Like, I thought they had a really nice, and I love that scene where she told him all this friend zone shit, stupid, you got to stop it, this is dumb. And then they're just leaning hard into those dynamics for at least half of Rosita's plot. Rosita's got two interesting plots. Two plots, essentially.
Yeah.
She's traumatized by the Whisperer situation and Sadiq getting killed, and she doesn't feel like she's a badass warrior anymore because she now is a mom, and certain priorities necessarily changed. All that stuff is good. They're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And whatever the fuck is going on with her and Eugene, like, they're trying to paint these people of like turning a corner between unrequited love and genuine friendship. I don't think it looks like this. I think this is insulting and dumb, but I don't know.
I thought the same. I did not like really any of this scene. There's so many things in this particular scene that I didn't like. She says she talked to Gabriel, didn't tell him about the horde that's coming because, you know, why? Who cares?
Right.
Nothing he can do about it. So I guess don't warn him or anything. That's right. One of the stupidest things Walking Dead has done in a long time. The other final thing about the scene that I didn't like is she's coming in here. He's clearly like prepping for war, right? We find out later that he's setting up a battery bank, which is going to be the first line of defense against the incoming horde. And she's like, well, if you love this girl, get off your ass and go get her. And he walks off the job. I guess he was done in that particular moment.
If he hadn't done that, it would have fried 50 more zombies. Wired a couple more batteries in series,
they might not even have gotten through. Up. He might have been stringing up, you know, like a whole bunch more instead of just one wire. He could have put 8 wires up.
It's going to make a Tesla coil out of Red Alert, man. The zombies would be ash.
Right.
He's
so he's
charred
fucks
within a 60 meter radius.
The important job he's trying to do and goes and chats with a girl on the radio. Come on.
Yeah, what the fuck?
This is not the time, Rosita.
Yeah, and someone wrote in and said, or maybe they sent it on Twitter, but they're like, one of the reasons that Rosita's plot's not great is because she had double duty. She was working some other role, so they had limited time and availability. But I'm like,
she's been in a lot.
Like, I never feel like Rosita hasn't been around. I just feel like they're utilizing her poorly. Like, honestly, if they cut all this Eugene shit, her plot would be 10 times stronger, I think, because
and it's not
I've
like
always
she has
liked
to
Rosita.
Be in the writer's room for them to write good stuff for.
Right.
You know?
So it's like, yeah, but I don't know. Like, I've also gotten the feeling that, like, maybe we are the only ones that really hate this stuff and
maybe.
Other people think it's cute and or like healthy way to work through this weird relationship, which
I just think it's weird.
Granted. This is a weird relationship. This is a relationship that started with Eugene perving on her and Abraham fucking.
And then turned into a quadruple. So like
then turned into a quadruple situation. Like this is not a nuclear family type situation. A lot of people don't have direct experience with this stuff, but still it just feels, I don't know. She vacillates between being a very mature, formidable person that has serious thoughts and this kind of high school shit. Mm-hmm. That I just can't relate with. I don't think of it in terms of like Rosita for sure. And I thought like some of it, like, well, maybe she's running a high fever and she's just kind of dopey. She's not running a high fever anymore. And she's still kind of doing this weird.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out if you really love her and kiss me. Like, that's not how any of this works. Come on.
No. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll get right back to it.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. All right, Carol tells Lydia that she's going to kill Alpha. Lydia tells her she doesn't care, which is also known as the truth. And then they both cry over Henry. After, like, talking about how, you know, scarce the truth is.
I was going to say, this is a pretty good scene. That is a great way to break it down.
I'm recapping it. How stale must this cigarette be, huh?
Oh, Jesus.
This does not look hand-rolled. It looks professionally rolled. It looks like she just pulled this out of a pack of Marlboro, so...
They're in Virginia. You don't think that they can't
manufacture
some fine tobacco products?
Cigarettes.
Yeah, they found the whole 10 pallets worth of filters and rolling papers.
they're just rolling them up in the apocalypse?
They're doing them right. Yep. That seems like a cellophaning machine.
I guess if you got the filters, why not use them?
Because like I take it to understand that like a pack of cigarettes, it's like a year old is pretty stanky shit. Right, it tastes bad, smokes bad.
Yeah, they always taste bad. They're cigarettes, but they taste worse. Right. Yeah,
but they get dried out, and the temperature is too high. Like burn, I don't know, there's all kinds of bad things about it. So yeah, I don't know. But on the other hand, if you're addicted to nicotine, then there are levels of smoking experience. They're already smoking cigarettes, so like you know, the floor is pretty low there. There's levels of smoking that we will descend to apparently. Yeah. I don't know.
She found a whole crate of Juul pods, but she just dumped those in the river.
Oh, she wasn't interested. Well, yeah. What are you going to do? Eugene's not going to let any of his precious ham wattage go to charging the Juuls. But yeah, this whole like, you probably hate me. No, you do enough of that all of yourself already. I thought that was a good line.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that like when you kill my mom, I won't be thinking of you. I'll be thinking about me and my mom's relationship and how fucked up that is. No, that's really excellent
and
stuff.
Henry too. I mean, she starts the scene looking at this heart with the H+L carved into it.
Yeah. And that fact that no one in the world knows how to deal with people that are sad. It's one of our biggest problems in the West.
Mm-hmm.
That like it's just uncomfortable. Like, oh, you're sad because something happened. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Or like I can relive blah. But it's It sucks. It sucks. It sucks to be sad and it sucks to be mourning, but it's also a healthy process that we have to do. It's like, imagine if you broke your leg and people didn't talk to you for 6 to 8 weeks until you could walk again.
That's the worst
thing. People
bomb
you with love and they support you and they take your cast and they sign it and they make you feel special. But we don't know how to deal with that, with emotional and mental pain.
Well, I think it's also different if it's like a long-term physical problem too, right?
Sure.
People have problems with like, oh, this person lost a leg or...
Right, you're in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. How many of your friends and family are going to treat you differently if they bother to stay around at all? Because you're a constant walking reminder of their own mortality and how it's fucked.
Yeah, they don't know what to say.
And then here in the Walking Dead,
before they did, right? When you were still quote unquote you. Yeah.
Right, right. That's tough. I imagine it's even worse in a world where everyone has a terrible backstory. Like, who gets to complain? Who gets to feel down today? Who gets to sulk and be depressed and sleep for 3 days because they can't get out of bed? Like, the answer is no. So, like, it's all, like, really fucked. And I like the show is both showing the absurdity of the way that is in any kind of lifetime, and also like showing other characters working against it, doing the hard work of reconnecting, being vulnerable, saying I've got cancer but who cares, you know, I don't want to. That's I really like that. I thought there's a lot of that good theming in this episode.
Yeah, then we go out to the Hilltoppers. Okay, the Hilltoppers.
The Hillfolk.
They're fortifying the perimeter when rats start running out of the woods, signifying the approach of the Horde. Yeah. This is cool, although I continue to have problems with their animal CG in this show. There's like a blur filter that they put over everything. I don't like it.
It looks dirty. It looks cheap.
It reminds me of that shitty deer that they did several seasons ago.
Oh my god. Yeah, they've struggled a time or three with CGI animals in this this show. And also like the idea of like, I don't think of rats infesting a forest. Maybe they're just tons of rats.
Maybe.
I think of field mice, I think of squirrels, I think of possums,
deer.
I think of rabbits, I think of like the idea of a stampede in front of some kind of all consuming thing like a zombie horde or a fire, that's like fairly well established. It's just like a very pedestrian thing, like 100 rats come boiling out of the woods. I don't know, maybe it shows how well Hilltop has swept the countryside of the other large animal life. They've eaten them all.
Maybe it's a Pied Piper rats. Maybe it's like Alpha Pied Pipering these walkers. And so rats. I don't know, man.
Until I see Boston Rob with the flute, or no, the professor. Until I see the professor with the flute, I'm not buying the Pied Piper.
Okay. He'll get up there. Luke will do it if he has to.
He will.
Okay. Eugene gets on the radio and he sings a song. While everyone else is off doing what they're supposed to do, prepping for this approaching horde, Blue Velvet or whatever her name is, Blue Weevil responds. He apologizes and then asks her. She asks who Rosita is. He explains, kind of. And she gives him a location and a date to meet her and says he says he'll be there. And then Rosita comes in and fetches him.
And he's going to be ready for bed because I got a date to go to. He Forrest Gumps. This is When the Wind Blows by Iron Maiden is what they're singing to each other.
Really? Okay.
And I swear to God, I feel like someone saw Stranger Things season 3 and it's like, oh, this is a real nice moment. We need to fit this in as an homage. And it's like, I don't know. It seemed kind of silly in
context.
Is
Dustin the Eugene of The Walking Dead or of Stranger Things rather?
That's doing Dustin real dirty.
I know.
Yeah. I don't know. you could say that Eugene's a John Cusack also showing up with a big boombox on his shoulder outside in the rain. Like it's like,
except
you
the boombox on his shoulder is his head.
It felt kind of weird and out of place, and I didn't recognize the tune, and the fact it was
either.
An Iron Maiden tune, I thought it was kind of funny, but
that's unexpected.
Yeah, yeah. They also there's a cool getting ready, geared up montage. Judith is checking in. If you like, she's calling for Daito, which is the Japanese word for long sword, which I think Michonne's got two swords, right? She's got the full size katana and then whatever the side arm of a samurai was is what Judith has got. So like, you know, they get like a big sword, little sword kind of. I thought that was cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the thing she hamstrings that one dude in Oceanside with, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then, you know, there's the Stephanie comes back on and is kind of sort of jealous of Rosita, but Eugene kind of soft pedals the relationship and I guess he's talking about how it is now versus how it was 5 minutes ago. But yeah, I just so from Charleston, West Virginia, they're not that far away.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to meet a mile south of this Kanawha River next to Southern Railroads. Like, do you think they're going to blow off the turn? They're going to redress the terminus set. That's what I kind of.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be loaded railroads. Into the B train and he'll never be seen.
When I heard
again.
Railroads, I'm thinking, well, this is going to be the terminus building. Going to shoot it from the opposite angle. They're going to paint it a different color.
For
gonna,
sure.
But yeah, like it feels like a set recycling, which is fine. You can do that. And it works out fine. If you spend a little bit of money, a little bit of elbow grease, get the creative and inventive with the camera angles and whatnot.
I mean, why do you think Earl was so adamant that they don't run? Because they're not gonna spend the money in one more season to set up an entirely new set. God damn it! They bought Alexandria.
True.
I don't know how they got their use for so long. But yeah, they have Alexandria. They have Hilltop. No
I think
more.
They
sets.
Bought it. I think they bought a suburb.
Bought a town
and just
yeah.
said, "Yeah, fuck it. We're gonna use this investment."
It certainly could. But, somebody owns those developments.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of good stuff in here. Like, you know, everybody checking on each other, getting all their weapons ready, it felt cool. It felt like a Lord of the Rings before the Battle of Helm's Deep kind of gearing up. It even got the same feel of a nighttime battle, a nighttime horde approaching kind of unseen.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. And Eugene committing to meet her there in a week. Like that screams bonus episode.
Oh, yeah.
To me. So there's going to be one of the bonus episodes that's going to be called The Mullet. And you'll know it's going to be. I love talking about stuff that everyone knows about, except for us.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's riveting.
Speculating on actual history that's occurred.
All right. Next scene is Daryl telling Ezekiel that he gets him, even though they haven't said much to each other, and asks him to help make sure that the children get out. Afterward, Judith says she wants to fight with him. She says, oh, I'm not scared, but it's totally a front. And then she gives him back his vest, complete with a new wing. And Daryl tells her to go with Ezekiel if he does come calling during the fight. And she promises to do that.
I thought this was a great scene. It's a great scene of like Daryl acknowledging the complicated relationship he's had with King Ezekiel as Carol's.
Yeah. BFF.
Platonic BFF forever. And the mutual respect they have, and to the fact that like Daryl's entrusting like the children, which we know are very important to him. Like he really loves the kids and is very got a big soft spot and sees him as one of the strongest fighters. And like if either one of them go down, the other make a solemn pledge to get the kids out. I like it. Brought a manly tear to my eye. And then I thought the scene where Daryl is dealing with Judith and her being like, you know, fronting about not being afraid versus what she's really afraid with him talking about the things that's just great. That's great parenting. And I thought it's like I love Daryl so much. Mm-hmm. He's been my favorite character for the entire run of the series. And they didn't have much for him to do for a long couple of seasons, and him being kind of central to the story and to the survivor story, I just I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, I mean, once Rick was out of the picture, he needed to step up and do something.
And when, you know, she's talking about all the things like, well, you know, hypothetically, I could see someone being afraid about, you know, losing their mom or if their brother got hurt or if like one of their cool uncles, and him's like, yeah, no shame in that. It's great. Mm-hmm. And her presenting him with the new wing vest, which we talked about that he's lost a wing and has kind of seen better days. And I mean, shit, that thing's like, didn't he get that in season two?
He might have had it since day one. Yeah, it's very, very old. And you can tell by that one wing that it is just completely covered in dirt. It's barely recognizable. And then the bright blue wing that Judith puts on it is great.
Yeah, it's got a glow up now, and it's kind of like kid. It's a, and yeah, Daryl's rocking it. It's cool. I like it. 100% seal of approval on the scene.
Yeah, I like these paintings of the fallen.
Yeah,
people that, you know, we're familiar with, like Glenn, Herschel. I think maybe Andrea is up there. I didn't see all of them, but
I thought maybe I thought maybe they were all the people that died in the beheading incident. I wasn't sure.
Oh, I think Glenn's there in the center.
Was Glenn painted too? Yeah. Okay, so this is just famous hilltop. But like Carol doing, giving it a little prayer or whatever she was doing, a little before the big battle. I thought it was nice too.
Yeah, tells you what they're fighting for.
Yeah, and again, that's the theme. People mm-hmm. that have something to live for. Eugene has something to live for. Rosita has something to live for. Aaron has something to live for. The blacksmith does. All these people have something to live for. And the other side just doesn't. They're already acknowledged it as dead, and they're just like, this is their future is nihilist. And like, I gotta believe that counts for something in when you're in a real pitched battle, a battle of survival.
Mm-hmm. So then Carol asks Daryl not to hate her, and he says he never will, but then he just kind of walks off. There's no hug or anything. And he picks up a weapon as he heads toward the gates, where he joins the army waiting for the horde. It shows up and smash cut to commercial.
Yeah. This is a good scene too. Like, Daryl and Carol, him essentially saying, I could never hate you. It doesn't mean you can't let me down. You can't disappoint me, but like, you know, essentially I know you and love you enough that like, no matter what you do, it's always going to make a certain amount of sense. And I maybe wish you didn't do it, but I'm always going to see you as, you know, my friend who's kind of lost their way or is acting out in ways that I can totally understand, because I do that shit too sometimes. It's good. And it causes Carol to break down. I hope that this is a beginning of a pulling out of her funk, but like also, she's going to be on a trajectory where she leaves everybody at the end of the run of The Walking Dead. So, but I guess I should slow my roll a little bit, because that doesn't mean what I am thinking it's meaning, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't have like to be the duo, you know, going rogue in the woods show.
Right.
It probably won't be right. It almost can't be. So,
right. Yeah. But I've always liked Daryl too. She's one of my other favorite characters.
The spinoff is Daryl and Carol go to Oceanside, and now it's basically the same show, except Daryl and Carol are just at Oceanside.
I think Daryl and Carol on a shrimp boat, like Forrest Gump and Lieutenant Dan, would be pretty fucking incredible.
Oh no, it's the exact same show. It's just that like they have not focused on Oceanside at all, right? We know so little about Oceanside.
Right.
Like the spinoff, quote unquote, is just gonna be them going to one of the other communities they haven't focused on.
It even sounds like one of those shitty Baywatch spinoffs, like The Walking Dead Oceanside. You know? Like sure, they could do that. I don't know if I'm down for more than a half season of that, but like,
I don't know. That sounds terrible.
I'm committed to a half season of whatever the Daryl Carroll show ends up being. Like, I've got like, because the upside and downside of that are so diametrically opposed and opposite, and like, no one would I know. It could be either way. Like,
are we going to cover that here? We should probably cover that here, huh?
We'll see. Well, I mean, like, because I'm saying I wasn't going to commit you, but I said me personally, I'm down for a half season of whatever, just because I've been with this show a long time. These are my two favorite characters that are still surviving. And I kind of want to see, I don't know if they're my favorite, but like definitely Daryl's there, but then, you know, top three or five. I'm in.
All right. When we come back from commercial, the walkers press through an electrified fence, but they keep coming. The fighters go out to the perimeter to meet them, killing a bunch of the barricade, but the fence won't hold. The electricity seems like a waste. Like, you could have probably done more damage with an electric lawnmower. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Generate some kinetic energy, just some giant blade spinning like Ash and Evil Dead.
Yeah, man.
Our armies of darkness. I was doing like, it's like, do I want to do a back of the envelope calculation about how much fucking power has to go through those wires to literally burn a zombie's head off? And I'm like, because it's pretty fucking cool. And honestly, like, that is my big critique of all this big zombie action is I feel like a 10-foot spear with some kind of hardened tip is your ideal zombie killer. And they keep finding very heavy blunt force trauma things would exhaust a physical person, like a person wielding that over and over again. Like, yeah,
made to crush a normal human skull and used on marshmallow skulls, right? Like, they've already demonstrated these are the peeps of human heads. They don't need much to crush one.
And they're outfitting these people. King's Eagles run around with a fucking sledgehammer, something that like Bobby fucking Baratheon would blush and be like, that's a bit too much for a warhammer. Right. You know, this famously strapping burly ass dude and King Ezekiel with like a cantaloupe coming out of his neck is chopping soft ass zombie wood with it. But it looks cool. It like all these.
Yeah.
Like if they're making action figures, you want the professor with his big weird gear mace, and you want the but that's the other thing. It's like I've seen Daryl with his two knives and he can kill a lot of zombies and lot of people. And I've seen Daryl swinging his Morningstar and it's slower and more efficient or less efficient. Maybe you get more reach, which is useful if you're fighting behind a living wall of people, but like, nah, it just looks cool. Burning through a zombie with like a laser beam is cool. Smashing with a morning star is cool. And I'm just gonna have to let the practical nature of it all like go because it's just not fun.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not called the pragmatic dead, you know?
No, for sure. There's a lot of other, you know, kind of cool stuff here, like Beta and the other Whispers using slingshots to fire sap bombs at the survivors, lighting the barricade up, and soaking the survivors with, you know, the sap. And then
Jerry, it smells like a Christmas tree. It can't possibly hurt us. This is funny.
And then, trapping them between, you know, the Horde and the gates with the fiery gates. And yeah,
like these guys are soaked with accelerant and they're between two flaming things. It's terrifying. Like, yeah, man, I don't know. I thought that Hilltop would stand in some way. I think Hilltop's just going to be completely destroyed. Like, there's no way they put out those fence flames unless, I don't know, maybe they got some kind of crazy, like the opening up the blacksmith will be like now, and they'll just have like big basins of dirt that they just dump along the front of the thing and smother. I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving the Hilltop enough credit, but
except they accidentally dump the hot oil and then that just accelerates
They prep for boiling pitch at the top of all the walls and they just, they're trying to start fires, not put them out. But yeah, I'm starting to think the Hilltop is just going to be lost, man.
Yeah, Hilltop didn't how they think recover. The Whispers had this capability, right? They did not see fire coming at all, which is interesting because we've been talking about like, how do the Whispers survive out there in the cold Virginia winters I don't know. From the start, Hilltop, Alexander, all these survivors have not sat down and really thought about the logistics of the Whisperers and how they can use that to their advantage or what they should even be prepared for coming up against. So shame on them. Shame on them.
But how do you, because I think one of the cool things is about the Whisperers is they literally live off the land. There's no logistics trained to attack. They dig up worms to eat them wherever they're at. They find barrels of flammable material in the surrounding trees. Like, there's nothing you can do to deny them the things they need to march. And like I honestly don't know how you attack it because there is like, typically you do this and you do that, and you encircle this and you'd raid their supply lines and you'd scorch. But like nothing really works against them.
Yeah.
So because they're self-sustaining everywhere you kill one of them, you generate more armies of their dead. You kill one, they kill one of you, same principle. Like, it's It's like attacking and kind of like attacking an alien force that has like teleporters and warp drive. Like, fuck, how do we slow this machine down? And they've consistently underestimated. Like, I don't think anyone thought that the Whisperers were capable of something sophisticated like this fiery barrage that they put up.
Oh, yeah. They probably don't even know that the Whisperers wear underwear, let alone that they could harvest elastic from it.
Have been braiding elastic from all their underwear belts. Sure. Right. Who could have predicted? Who could have seen that coming?
Can't really blame them. But yeah, it's cool. And they leave us on the cliffhangeriest of cliffhangers there at the end, where they're trapped between the gates and the Horde. I mean, if anybody is inside the gates, if they've got, okay, they've got people with catapults, right? So these people with catapults see the gates are on fire. Their people are down there screaming, hey, help us out. Open those fiery gates for us so we don't have to touch them.
Mm-hmm.
Someone can let them in, right?
I think, yeah, I don't know, but poof, boy, you just get touched with that fire. I feel like a couple people, maybe even one that we care about, might die screaming next episode.
Certainly one of them did die this time, right? Like, somebody got lit up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't know, like, who's the most likely to die? I don't think Ezekiel. Lydia. Ezekiel,
yeah,
sure.
He's swinging those dreads around, man. He's got like a 4-foot radius.
Oh yeah, that's right. His flammable radius, just from the hair alone, is I've really been feeling like I can't shake the death head over Jerry. Ever since his near brush with death, and he's out there in a frontline soak too. Boston Rob would make a lot of sense because he's gotten a lot of lines the last few weeks, and he's kind of like one of the most vocal anti-integration whisperers, which. Probably to do the thing that The Walking Dead needs to do. They need to, you know, overcome that, and you can kill people to overcome their opinion.
Sure.
I feel like somebody recognizable, maybe it could be the blacksmith. Someone needs to die to keep a very effective tension that they've got going on so far. You can't have this larger scale of battle where this, like, they've talked about how hopeless it was and how they thought everyone was going to die. And then the Whisperers come out with this fucking napalm shit. If no one of note dies, it's going to start ratcheting that tension down that I've been feeling all season long. And I don't think they want to do that going into the big battles, right?
No, definitely not. Do you have any predictions? I haven't seen ahead at all. So do you have any predictions on how they get out of this? Because I'm thinking like maybe Magna sacrificing herself for something makes a lot of sense.
But what's she going to do? Come flying in from the cave?
Not Magna, Mary. Oh. Mary, Gamma. Magna and Gamma.
Gamma.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay. Because I'm like, what? But then I started thinking, oh shit, what if they find the tunnel that connects the hilltop? And there's like a split, like what? Like,
there you go.
Does Connie and Magna turn the tide of the battle? I mean, they might be able to get the children away. Because that's
they
my
come
thing.
Out
is
with
like
the
both
extra
Ezekiel,
dynamite that they found along
both
the way.
Both of the badasses are supposed to be the safety kill switch on the get the children out plan are stuck outside in danger.
True.
So I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a pretty I will be disappointed if we fade out of black in the beginning of the next episode and the battle's over, like Hilltop's burnt to the ground. A couple people got in the way.
Yeah.
We don't like I think that they've set this up that there needs to be. I've kind of underestimated the Hilltopians, the Hilltoppers at this point. I kind of think there should be a little bit of like it's a doomed battle, but they should have a little bit like these catapults should go off and, you know, they should sting the Whisperers enough. But I don't know.
If they don't,
might just come back and
it feels hopeless. Right. Like if they're not able to mount some kind of defense against this Horde, then I don't know where you go from here because Alpha
throws
the Horde.
Feeling hopeless is fine because Michonne is the savior. She is the one on the quest to get the magic anti-Death Star weapon. So feeling hopeless is fine, but like they've also teased catapults and shit, and I just want to see them go off.
Yeah.
Like killing 50 to 100 walkers would be very cool, but it'd also be like up against the complete loss of Hilltop would be, you know, one of those Pyrrhic victories you're always hearing about. So I don't know. I just hope they don't come back with just a yada yada battle, because like I feel like early season Game of Thrones did that a lot too. Got us all hot for a battle and then it was always just the aftermath. And I will say The Walking Dead's not doing the terrible thing in late season Game of Thrones where Like, I haven't seen Daryl go down underneath 16 zombies and then he heroically fights back. And then I see Rosita do that. And then, I, like, you know, that there's one episode where, like, that happened like six times in the Game of Thrones. I was like, well, this is just stupid.
Yeah.
I am legit fearing for everyone's life now, and they need to keep that going.
I guess the ray of hope here is that Alexandria's walls are made of cold rolled steel, and that fire would burn do nothing easily against those.
That's true. That's true.
So yeah, even Pine if Hilltop does fall,
Pine Tar can't melt cold rolled steel.
It cannot. I don't care what Alex Jones says about it. It can fucking not melt it.
I'm going to call bullshit if I start seeing that. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That's all we got for the episode, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Man, I cannot wait to see the next one. It's a natural cliffhanger, and I am legit excited to see how they get themselves out of this, or even if they do. Mm-hmm. We'll, of course, be back next week, episode 12. Until then, I'm, of course, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.